Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the OBSE Perfection Limited Q4 FY 2026 conference call hosted by Nuvama Wealth and Investment Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need any assistance during this conference, please signal for an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touchtone telephones. Please note that this conference call is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nishant Sharma from Nuvama Wealth and Investment Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Farah. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Q4 and FY 2026 result conference call of OBSE Perfection Limited. We at Nuvama Wealth sincerely thank the management team for giving us opportunity to host this call. From the management side, we are joined by Mr. Saksham Likha, Managing Director, Mr. Sanjeev Verma, Executive Director and CFO of the company. Before we begin the call, I would like to remind you about the safe harbor. The management may make some forward-looking statement in today's presentation, and this must be understood along with the uncertainty and risk associated with the company and, in general, the current scenario. I would now like to invite Mr. Saksham to share his opening remark, following which we will open the floor for Q&A. Over to you, sir. Thank you very much.
Hello, everyone. This is Saksham Likha. I'm the Managing Director of OBSE Perfection. Thank you, Nuvama, for hosting us today for this con call. I would like to extend a very warm welcome to you all for OBSE Perfection's earnings conference call for the year ended 31st March 2026. The financial year 2026, we clocked 54% revenue growth with EBITDA margins of 19.5%. At the last year con call, we have a guidance of 40% revenue growth and 2% gross margin improvement. We see surpass on both. Our exports revenue share stood at 20% as sales expanded to 17 countries. In absolute terms, our export sales went up by 50%, while non-automotive revenue was up by 150%. As the year had uncertainty with tariffs and West Asia conflict, we proactively invested in working capital and built up inventory to ensure business continuity. We now have a very strong order book of rupees 1,200+ crores, which provides us revenue visibility over and above our existing revenue and customers. Of this, our automotive order book is approximately rupees 980 crores, while non-auto order book stands at approximately rupees 230 crores, both of which are to be served in over a period of 6-7 years. During this year, we did a preferential issue of 43.3 crores to augment our growth and invest in building mega factories. This year has been one of tremendous growth for OBSE Perfection. When we started the company, we were one process company with only CNC machining in-house. The last year particularly has been tremendously fruitful in terms of adding new processes and capabilities. We acquired new processes like cold forging, hot forging, as well as stamping. There has been very serious focus on diversification with defense, aerospace, non-auto sectors like humanoid, medical, have been something that we've been working towards, and we have been getting significant success in some of these sectors as well. All in all, today we are a company that does not just CNC machining, but several processes, CNC machining, investment casting, cold forging, hot forging, as well as stamping in-house. The decision behind having all these processes is to create a company that can eventually get into sub-assemblies. The process has already started. The journey has begun. With all these processes in-house, it essentially gives us scale and scope to enter any supply chain in the world, which is the only reason we have, in such a short period of time, been able to enter coveted supply chains like the medical implants, where we've supplied our first casting parts, which have been tested rigorously and are now practically perhaps inside a human body. We've also become a part of not just humans, but also humanoids, where we have supplied our first lots of aluminium milled parts, very, very complex close tolerance parts, which will become part of some of the largest selling humanoids in the world. So all in all, very, very successful year for your company. And we believe we have been walking the path and that we told you we would. So over to you. We're happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may enter star followed by one on the touchtone telephones. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may enter star followed by two. Participants are requested to please use only handsets while asking a question. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Piyashu Jain from Growth X Infinity. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sashram. Congratulations on good set of results.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so my first question will be on, as we have an order book of around 1200 crores, like how much we are planning to convert in revenue for this year?
So, like I said, 1200 crores is going to be converted entirely in 5 to 6 years. So every year we would see approximately 100 to 200 crores of this 1200 crores added to our existing revenue. So that is the kind of growth we are hoping, you know, will order book translates to revenue at the pace of 100 to 200 crores per year.
Okay, so like this year we somewhere around 220 crores. So like for the upcoming year, we can expect somewhere around 330 crores.
So I would give you guidance on that later. But as of today, what I can say is all projects have their own start of execution point. So not every project starts this year. There are some projects that will start next year and some might start a year and a half later. And so if you know automotive industry works with meticulous planning of at least 2 years in advance, we get the orders for what needs to be set up and what kind of infra needs to be put in place. So all in all, I would say that, this order book gets done in the next 5 to 6 years, but most of the revenue starts from this year itself. Most of the projects are starting and some would start from the next year.
Great. And just a second, because as you already know that the geopolitical tensions are a bit under, the commodity prices are rising. So now what kind of EBITDA, because can you explain or throw some light on it, like what kind of EBITDA margins we can see for the upcoming year?
So this has been, no doubt, this has been a challenging year. So was the last one. But we have, mitigated tariffs. We've been very, very meticulous with our planning, and this year was also difficult. And the Iran war is creating a lot of issues for the manufacturing industry. Well, that said, we have taken proactive measures, and whether it comes to building enough inventory, keeping enough stock, before the whole price increases happened, we were meticulous enough to hold on to more aluminium, more oils, so we, could navigate this with as much care as we could. So that was done. The shipping costs have gone up, no doubt about it. And this is a VUCA world, a lot of uncertainty. And to give you a solid number is difficult, but what I hope that we can still grow our margins by 1% this year, simply because our exports is going to be much larger. And and you'll see our defense revenue, our non-automotive revenue will continue to grow.
Okay, so like on a conservative side, if we can say, at least we will sustain these margins which we are getting as of today.
That is correct, yeah.
Okay, great. And just last question will be on the expansion side, as we are going in Sanand and Supa. So like, would you throw some light on it, what kind of a project, as we are also setting up a dedicated plant for a largest, single large player. So like on that project, if you throw some light on it.
Absolutely. So as we continue our expansion, we've seen that we need land in strategic places. Sanand is one of the continuing to be one of the largest automotive hubs in India with Maruti presence, and their suppliers are there. So we are right now in Delhi, Faridabad, Chennai, Pune. And Sanand puts us right in the middle of a lot of action that we've been missing out on. So that particular plant has been set up, and we already have a confirmed nomination from one of our largest customers, that's Tenneco, to provide a certain application, which is the shock absorber rod to them. And so the plant has been set up dedicated for them. And of course, as we explore the area, we have our presence there. I am already in touch with multiple other customers who want to source from us. So that said, Sanand is going to be another strategic hub for OBSE's growth. Supa is a land parcel between Pune and Aurangabad. So Supa is an industrial, you know, land where a lot of new companies are coming up, and we decided to integrate some of our facilities in Pune and put them all together in one gigafactory or one mega factory. And so this is a very large land parcel, almost 11 acres, where we'll have integrated processes like casting, forging, stamping, all within one large 10-acre shop floor.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. That's all from my side. I have certain questions, but I will join back the queue. Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Agastya Dave from CAO Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and congratulations on great set of numbers. You really did beat your guidance quite handsomely across the board. I was trying to find any particular line item where you were off by a certain amount. You were not. Margins and revenue, everything is looking pretty good. So the previous participant touched upon a lot of things that I wanted to ask, but I would like to emphasize more on the large CapEx that you have announced in terms of capacity addition. If you can go into a little bit more detail, what kind of visibility do you have from your clients that gives you the confidence to have such a huge quantum leap in your capacity? And second, what are the timelines you're looking at here? So when does the work start? When do you see commercial operations starting? And would we see, because it's such a huge jump in capacity that you already have, on top of the capacity that you already have, would you have a few years of subpar margins and very high depreciation costs till you can, like, absorb everything? Or do you have the visibility that the ramp-up will be fairly, fairly fast once you have commissioned the project?
So there's a lot of parts to your question, and let me try and answer from the beginning. So why are we doing, what kind of visibility do we have? So just to answer that, we have been growing at nearly 40-50% year-on-year, where in areas where space ultimately becomes a big constraint for us every 6 months to 1 year. We have to find new plants from time to time, lease them, take whatever is available, because growth has been unprecedented for us in the last couple of years. So looking at that, also the fact that all these years, our large customers like Tenneco, ZF, MAHLE, Faurecia, these are multi-billion euro companies, blue chips in their own, most of them are listed players in their own countries. So we have been serving them domestically for a while, and only in the last 1 or 2 years, we've truly been given a chance to serve their global counterparts, which is more than 90% of their revenue. So most of these customers' revenue in India is less than, in fact, when you say Tenneco, it's less than 5% of their global revenue. And only last year we have received the opportunities after having served them, you know, consistently for like 3-4 years, 5 years in India, we've been presented the opportunity to go meet their global counterparts, where we are now discussing very, very large scale projects for their American or Mexican applications. So I do see that export would itself become so big for us that we would need these lines. And of course, India is the only, I still believe very much in China Plus One. and where India is the only viable alternative. So all those opportunities are, you know, flowing to us right now. So that's why I think we can grow at a much faster pace from this moment onwards. We have barely touched the tipping point now.
Right, so you expect the growth to accelerate? Is that your guidance?
Absolutely, over the years, yeah.
Okay.
In absolute terms, yeah.
Right, right. And on the margin side, sir, once this facility comes in, gets commissioned, would you see like a lot of overheads on the P&L and then the drag of the depreciation and interest, or you are comfortable enough with that?
So we are always frugal in the way we utilize our resources. Even in Supa, we're going to, you know, go in a very phased, calculated manner. We're not going to put all our resources, set up a huge infrastructure and then wait for it to turn into revenue. We're going to go slow and we're going to go frugal to ensure that, you know, the depreciation costs are minimal while we continue to expand. So that has been the plan all along, that we go in a phased manner in any place we grow. We test the soil first before we put all the eggs in one basket. So we test the waters before we go all in. And that's the plan with Supa as well. So in our line of work, I'll tell you, we're not putting fixed, dedicated lines for, you know, for a certain product, because we are a build-to-print company. And essentially, the advantage we have is that our machines are all very, very fungible, where one machine can make an automotive part, and within a couple of hours, it could do an entirely different part, which still would find application. So if one business goes down, the other one business scales up at the same time. So that's an advantage we have over traditional automotive suppliers, which have their own perhaps patented design or products, and you know, where depreciation costs are really heavy if a project doesn't kick off. That is not the case with us. I can tell you that with complete confidence. Yeah.
Great, great. Thank you very much. All the best. And whenever you're comfortable sharing the timelines of this project and the guidance, that we would all appreciate it. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The next question is from the line of Vilay Rai from Kamaya. Please go ahead.
Hi, congratulations, Saksham, on great set of results.
Thank you so much.
Can you please throw some light on what products are we exactly making in the new areas of, say, aerospace, humanoid, and medical devices?
So let's talk about defense first, then we'll go to humanoids and medical and aerospace. So defense, we've been, last 1 year, we've done a lot of new developments where we've prototyped multiple medium and low caliber ammunition casings. So these are very, very high volume parts which have been tested. There are, some of these are under testing right now, and some have been validated. And so that's one thing we've done. We expect that to be a big part of our business in some time to come. Then we are doing ignition primers. So primers are essentially assemblies that are consumed every time a shell is fired. So ignition primer is the consumable part of the artillery gun to fire a shell. Essentially, this is what causes the shell to leave the artillery gun. So that's, again, a very high volume part or assembly of parts, four parts to be precise, where we have received our first orders, and this has actually gone into mass production from this month onwards. So this is the one project that will continue to run for a while, and while we are developing other primers as well for different guns. So we've also developed recently in our casting facility fins for a certain bomb called MK84, and these are, again, some of the most popular bombs in the world, and very, very high value parts, very, very critical, very high value parts for us. So those are the kind of stuff we've been doing for defense. In the Medicare, we have developed orthopedic surgical implants. Essentially, this is a cast part made in high chrome, high cobalt material. And this goes actually inside the close to the femur bone during the surgery. So this is the implant itself. We are not finishing it in-house, but we are making the casting and supplying it to companies that do the post-processing. So that's what we've done. And our efforts on aerospace are right now at the last leg. Our audit, so AS9100D is a very serious audit, and it takes at least a year from the start point, or sometimes even more. So we are on the very last leg right now, and within what I feel 2 months, our certification will come. For that, we've been in touch with 2 or 3 large customers who have visited us, and we've done supplier registration with a few of them. And so essentially in aerospace, I cannot give you guidance of what parts we will be doing because we're yet to get there, is what I'll say.
Yep. Thank you. It was very detailed. And how did we manage the tariff situation? Was there a situation of destocking in supply chain during the 50% regime? And can we see increase in orders as in
mobilizers? Yes. So tariff situation was, of course, difficult for the entire world. It was extremely unpredictable. To this day, a lot of people are confused as to what the real tariffs are going to be, including even our buyers sometimes, because it's so unpredictable what's happening there. But there was, for us, at that time, export was a very small part of our business, which continues to grow now. Some of the projects that were nominated, the customers did come to us and say this tariff is not making the pricing viable. So we did offer them a certain subsidy on the price. Like we said, we'll give you 10%. So we reduce the price by 10% to make the project viable until the tariff situation resolves. Fortunately for us, all tariff situation as of today seems like it has resolved to a certain level. And so the original pricing comes back before this project starts. A lot of these export projects you'll see start. Yeah?
Yeah, sure.
What I was saying is the majority bulk of the export orders to the US are going to start for us in the next 2 to 3 months. And you'll see a sudden surge in our export in terms of numbers to the US. So fortunately, the tariff situation is right now very, very manageable. So we get the original price that we had determined with the customer.
And how is the RFQ pipeline and orders from Europe, because you've seen a slowdown in the auto industry? And when we talk about China Plus One, we have seen that the INR has depreciated around 20% compared to Yuan. So has it put us in a favorable position to get more export orders?
Absolutely. I feel the INR depreciating, while it may not be, it's actually horrible for the country, but for exporters like us, it brings a whole range of you know, increased margins. We are a net exporter. We are hardly importing anything right now. So perhaps a few machines here and there, but everything else is sourced indigenously. And the increasing rupee will give us more margin to play with, and more competitiveness will come along as well.
And what about the pipeline from Europe?
Europe is slowing down, man. There's no doubt about it. Europe is right now in a very tough spot when it comes to the automotive industry. There's the whole confusion of whether the Chinese EVs will start dominating the European automotive space as well. So our focus, that's why, has moved on when it comes to exports to the US and Mexico, which are very thriving right now. So we work with ZF, which is a very large European player, for a while. And while our revenue with them in absolute numbers is only growing, not reducing, but still, last couple of years, we've put more focus, if I had to say, in the American subcontinent. And we have a dedicated resource in the US. We have a business advisor who's working with us and helping us grow in that market.
Thank you so much, Saksham, and best of luck for the future.
Thank you.
Thank you. A request to all participants, please limit your questions to only 2 questions per participant. We have many participants awaiting their turn. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Saumil Jain from Lucky Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Pratham. Thanks for taking my question and congratulations on a good FY26.
Thank you.
Out of the 220 odd crores revenue, how much is CV exposure? And on the total business, how much is from the stock absorber rods? Just to follow up on that as well, the new plan that you're setting up and the visibility from Tenneco, just wanted to check if this is for the new suspension system order, suspension system product that they've launched, DaVinci. Is it for that product?
Okay, so can I give you some high-level numbers of the first question that you asked me?
Yes. Yes.
So I feel of the 220 crores we did last year, around 40 odd crores must be from EV-related components. That's, and do we have the exact number of it?
Sorry, did you mention EV or CV-related?
You said EV. You asked me EV or CV?
EV.
So much. Okay, of all the automotive revenue we do, I think around 50% of it goes to commercial vehicles. Between 40 to 50%, depending on quarter to quarter. So CV is a big part of our business. Most of the Tenneco business we're doing, the clean air goes to CV, the Ashok Leyland's, Tata Motor, Mahindra. So those are our largest end consumers of our products.
Okay. That must be on the exhaust systems. On the shock absorber rods, is that new plan for the DaVinci product and what is the share of revenue today? How do you see that ramping up?
The shock absorber rod is must have been around 20 crore last year. 8-9% of our total revenue is my high level estimate. Yeah, 8-9%, and this number is gonna. This number in absolute terms is going to grow to almost double with the new plant being set up in Sanand for Tenneco. So that would be, we are expecting 40 crore sort of revenue from the shock absorber line that we're setting up in Sanand. And that said, some of these are yes for the new technology that Tenneco is putting up, DaVinci. Tenneco also now, by the way, intends to export a lot of their applications from India. So they are making India their major automotive manufacturing hub. A lot of the plants in the US are being brought to India because they've realized the efficiencies are far better in India and they're more competitive. So Tenneco is going to grow really fast, and for anyone who's associated with them, including us, we're going to grow with them.
Wonderful. Great to know that. Second, on the humanoid side, is it via a tier one subsystem manufacturer or is it directly with the OEM themselves?
No, it is through a tier one manufacturer, and the part is going to be assembled in India into an assembly that eventually cools down those motors. So every humanoid is a lot of motors and a lot of heating up. So we will be making critical aluminium parts which get brazed together and become a functional, what is called the cold plate of humanoids. We have supplied more than in the last half year, we might have supplied more than 4,000 parts as a, you know, during the trial phase. And so it's expected to become a very large part of our business this year.
This year itself, humanoids?
I'm sorry?
Humanoids is expected to become a very large part of revenue this year itself?
I hope so, yeah. This year itself, yes. We know for a fact that our principal customers have received large orders, and it's only a matter of time before those, you know, the supply chains are set, and we are the only one who's done the prototyping so far and the first batch validation. We've been part of the development from the beginning.
Great.
For this particular project.
One final question. About 40-45% of our revenues come from CV, right? And CV volumes this year, especially in the second half, have been extremely strong. Now, the industry projections say that leading into H2, there we might see some slowdown. So, do you see that affecting our growth, at least for the base business? The incremental opportunities are, of course, you know, incremental. But the base business, do you see some hit there? Depending on the CV.
So while the existing volumes may drop over a quarter or two, we continue to add new CV projects as well. So this, we are at the forefront of any new development that happens that our customers do, and we are the most preferred suppliers, which is why we've continued to grow despite, you know, difficult conditions, difficult times. Any new project that comes to them automatically comes to us. So I feel that I feel optimistic about the industry in general. I'm not panicked about, you know, the automotive numbers going down for us. There's far too many things we're doing right now, and a lot of those cannot be discussed right now. So there's multiple avenues of growth and multiple opportunities we're working on.
Great, Kasim. Thank you for answering my question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepak from Kalyani Family Office. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Kasim. Congratulations for the good set of results. I wanted to know more about, you know, the longest term vision. Like right now, we are more of a build-to-print business, right? So, what would be the long-term course of chart would look for you broadly? Like, would you look to move towards, you know, a higher specification or an IP-driven business, or, you know, build-to-spec, something like that?
Yeah, we are a build-to-print business right now. And that gives us agility, flexibility, and, we can do defense work, we can do marine work, because we're not really focused on a certain sector. And the way to scale in that business is to have, not restrict ourselves, what I feel, in a certain commodity or a certain industry, which is why we have been venturing out, doing a lot of defense work. It's a very high priority for us right now. As the managing director, I'm personally completely involved in the automotive side of the business. And so we continue to build more difficult, more precise parts, which are used in far more niche applications than the cars and the bikes of the world. That's how we move up the value chain, one. And second, we are also exploring, with all these different processes in-house, we have been exploring getting into assemblies. This year with the stamped, we are on the verge of closing down an acquisition of assets of a stamping company. And so with that comes also capabilities to create welded assemblies. Now that further moves us up the value chain. The company is also very much interested in building its own products, and I see it's only a natural curve for us where we will be having our own IP products over the next five years, I feel. Now, these could go to an automotive application or a defense application. That is yet to be figured out. But I do see with all these processes and with the mindset we have, we will be able to crack that line of work.
Sure. Hoping for the best. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepak Podar from Sapphire Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm audible, sir.
It's just always nice.
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir, for this opportunity. So I just wanted to understand first on this capex that we have planned, I mean, the 5x space that we mentioned. Mm-hmm. So in capex amount, and what could be our revenue potential post this commissioning? So any color you can provide on that?
So I could tell you what that plant is capable of doing. A space like that for an industry like ours in itself is capable of doing very large revenues. Of that one super plant could do 700-800 crores on its own, maybe more, when it runs at peak efficiencies. Of course, would it happen overnight? No, it would take a lot of time, effort to get to that stage. So we're going to be slow with our approach and very calculative. But that is the kind of vision we have, to create a plant that has enough capacity that surpasses our 4 or 5 separate dissociated plants and create that one space. And of course, it's going to take a lot of money to create such facilities. But it's a long journey, I feel. So I don't have the exact numbers on my mind.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what's the capex plan we have for FY27?
So we are hoping to put some of our from our internal approvals another 15 to 20 crores in the business as incremental capex, and we are pretty much set, or I feel we're pretty much set for the year, for the next 2 years with that kind of money put back in the business, and so that should sustain us.
Okay. So 15 to 20 crores kind of index. Any revenue growth outlook we have shared for FY27? I mean, what's the range we are looking at? I mean, we grew by more than 50% last year, right?
We did, and we committed for 40%. So we exceeded our commitment. We'll happily do the same. And so we commit of a similar guidance of 40-45% this year as well.
40-45% revenue growth.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And just last thing, if I can squeeze in, I mean, your export, if you see the share of your export in your current order book is much higher than the 20% export mix we are doing, right? So ideally, going forward, your export revenue mix is likely to increase. So, we see higher margins in export as compared to domestic, and will be margin accretive for us as the export mix increases. So any thoughts on that would be very helpful.
I mean, you had the answer in your question. You're right about everything you said. So export would be more than 30-35% of our business this year. And it's we quote at least 10% plus over our domestic pricing for those parts. So that's why, despite all these challenging times, we feel there's going to be a margin expansion.
Okay, I got it. That's very helpful, sir. I mean, wish you all the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gaurav Shah from Nitya Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Thank you, sir, Gaurav,
for giving this opportunity, and congratulations on a good set of numbers. I just had one question on the order book. Would it be possible to quantify how much is confirmed and what is the nomination that we've received?
I would not say any nomination that we've received is not a confirmed order. That would not be the truth. So in our line of work, there are two ways of working. The defense companies, they release a short-term order and keep renewing it. Like, let's say, an order that lasts 2 or 3 months, and then they renew the order the moment that order is consumed. So that's one way of working. But the larger companies in the world, the automotive who's who, they work on nominations. These nominations are to be taken with utmost seriousness. They are essentially, they do not ever release purchase orders. They release nominations and then they release schedules. That's all. So when a nomination comes to me, it tells me this is the start of project, this is the end of project, and these are the volumes I have to provide over the next 3 to 4 or 5 years. So our nominations are confirmed, and these are binding. These are legally binding terms. The volumes could go plus minus 20%, which is not unheard of in any line of work. Even a confirmed order could get cancelled in not with us, with any other company as well. So we take nominations with the same seriousness, and so nominated out of, so just to answer your question with clarity. Our short-term orders would be around, I think, 200-300 crores out of this, which the company calls a purchase order, and the rest of the business would be nominated orders plus scheduling agreements.
Understood, sir. Thank you for this clarification.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vardhaman Lunia from Trishula Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Chakram. Thanks for the opportunity. My question is about trying to gauge the company's broader competitive strategy. So what exactly is the common synergy in terms of capability across all our products, and what's stopping other precision players from following along?
So if I understand your question correctly, I would ask you to repeat it for me once, please. It wasn't very clear.
Sure. So, what exactly is the common synergy in terms of capability across all our products, and what's stopping some other precision player from following along?
So, we are a precision engineering company at the heart of everything we do. So, the common factor is when a defense customer needs something really precise made out of metal, or an automotive customer needs something really precise, again, made out of metal. So that's what we do. Metal precision engineering. You give me a metal part, tell me you need 10,000 of these or 100,000 of these or a million of those over a period of time. And no matter what sector you come from, if it's a viable, lucrative business for me, and if you are big enough for me to set up a line for you and I see that this business is going to grow, I'll do that business for you. So essentially, precision forging, precision casting. Now, these metal parts are made through different processes, and we have a lot of those in-house. So the growth has come from the fact that we have, over the years, continuously added capabilities and new capacity for different processes. Started with machining, got into casting, this year cold hot forging, and now getting into stamping. Within a couple of months, our stamping acquisition would be completely done, and we would be sitting on 32 presses ranging from 50 to 500 tons. Now, all of these processes combined gives us scalability, gives us visibility to new avenues of growth. That's the common factor. Could you also ask me the second part of your question?
No, only one part, but just again, more specifically, as you know, I mean, you have various kinds of precision engineering players of various sizes and shapes. Again, in terms of machinery, sub-assemblies, what exactly differentiates our capabilities from others' capabilities?
So see, this precision engineering business, just like any other business, is a business of discipline, and it's a business of financial management, having the right team. So there is no, I don't think there is a magic pill to any such thing. So we have been disciplined in our approach of business. We have taken calculative risks along the way. We've added new capacities, which is what sets us apart today. In a short time span of 8-9 years, we've been able to achieve what most players take a couple of decades. So this continuous focus on improving our processes. If we have, let's say, if I have a machine right now, the labor issue lately has been very significant, if you've gotten to know, across India. So we always had the vision to have fully automated machines to be able to, you know, counter that. And today, we had the vision 5 years back that we need to get into automations and robotics in terms of what we use in our company. So we were able to add 50 machines 3 years back, which were fully automated out of our fleet of 200. Now, those 50 machines obviously has put us ahead of the curve when it comes to those problems. So there is no one answer to this. Everything comes down to first principles. And I don't know how our peers are different from us, but I could tell you with certainty that we're doing, you know, everything right with the right level of integrity and the care and the right teams are in place at our plants.
Understood. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pranjal Mukhija from Growth Sphere Ventures. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm audible?
Yes.
Yes, please go ahead.
Hi, Sachin ji. It's been a while. I hope all is well. So congrats. First of all, I'd like to say congratulations on a great set of numbers. I mean, execution keeps on happening from the OBSE team. So really happy about that. I have a couple of questions, sir. So the first question is around the stamping business.
If you could just highlight, you know, what kind of products you are thinking of entering into the stamping division. Is it the same customers that you're catering here, or and are we able to, like, sort of cross-sell them into different products using this capability? Also wanted to understand here that there were some machines that were in transit, right? You were sort of upgrading our machinery here. So is the setup completely, is it all set up now? That's the first question.
So when it comes to the stamping business, yes, we, in fact, our customers told us that, "Why don't you get into this? We have a very large order. You've served us well, and we'll hold your hand. We'll tell you how to do it." So our customers buy a lot of stamped products, and we got the opportunity to, you know, offer distress sale of a certain assets that were lying in Pune. and we acquired that because of that. Now, having those assets in-house, we can cross-sell stampings to all of our other customers as well. And that's how we've been operating right from the beginning. One customer tells us to, you know, add capacity for them because it's a dedicated nomination, and then we acquire other customers around that area. So that's what we plan to do with stamping as well.
Right. And so unit economic wise, like, can we compare it to a forging, or like how is the unit economics here in terms of like the kind of capex that will involve and the kind of asset turn will generate?
So asset turn and stamping is pretty decent. What I see compared to machining, because the processing is very, very fast in stamping line of work. And so you can compare it to somewhere between forging and machining, where you have to be selective about what stamping business you're taking. In general, stamping is considered a low margin business, but you have to be selective again of the kind of work you're picking up, and it has to be a means to an end. In our case, stamping is critical to us because it leads us to assemblies eventually. And stamping and assemblies, sub-assemblies are about 80% of everything that is bought. Turned parts, forged parts are, relatively in terms of the spend are much, much smaller. Also, we have our defense customers who buy a lot of stampings, and they are also now visiting, auditing our plant. And we see there can be synergy where defense parts can also be made through this new acquisition that we've done.
Right. So the second question I had was around forging business, basically. So we've expanded our forging capacity by roughly 5 to 6x kind of a scale jump post this Faridabad acquisition. So just wanted to understand, now that as a company and over the last couple of years, we've been, you know, adding a lot of capabilities. We've moved away from, we're not just a machining company anymore. We're also doing casting, forging. Now we're saying stamping. And then we eventually have, you know, plans of getting into welding and assemblies. So just wanted to understand. I mean, I think right now there's the BL product that we're doing, which we're also casting right now. I think we started doing casting for it. But like, what kind of plans do we have for, backward integrating for our own products that we're anyway supplying to the customer? And, you know, how will that actually add to the unit economics of the business?
So limitedly, we're not backward integrating in entirety. So, in fact, it's not a priority for us. We did it for a certain line where our dependence on a certain customer for, let's say, a hot forge product was too high, and the project was going to last 10 years. So it made sense to have that certain product commodity now. The reason we're getting into multiple processes is because it is the only way you can continue to scale in an uncertain world, which it is right now. You cannot be dependent on one process in-house and see that process will give you enough scale. You have to have different avenues of growth to continue to grow at 50, even 100%. Growth can be achieved by having, you know, multiple processes in-house. So that is one reason we're doing it. And the second reason is, of course, all of these, when you have all these processes in-house, essentially what you can do is combine them together and create an assembly. So if I become an assembly player, having all these things in-house, I would become the cheapest assembly player in India, because my competition would be buying those parts from me or someone else. So the idea is to grow, which is why we continue to add new processes. And when you have all these processes in-house, you essentially can tap on any customer, because at any given time they need one or the other commodity. So then you can cross-sell everything else.
So finally, one last question I had on aerospace. You know, we mentioned that we're working with one customer closely now, and again, we're very close to, you know, getting our AS91D certification. So just wanted to understand this engine-based player that we're working with. I mean, the kind of products that, you know, they're wanting us to supply in future, where were they procuring these products from before us, and were they doing it in-house or was it some other supplier? And generally, what is the rationale behind the customer sort of, you know, outsourcing these products to us?
So the rationale behind outsourcing is the same as everywhere else, because nobody wants to get into machining. If I'm a big aerospace system supplier, then why would I machine my own part? because it's not my specialty, right? So I go to a supplier who has specialized that process. So some of these, we have received expression of interest and RFQs from three or four different aerospace customers, which is when we decided to get into our own certification, get our own certification done. It's taken over a year. And I'm pretty sure currently these parts are being made at other large aerospace companies. I don't know the names, but perhaps we'll have similar capabilities like an Azad Engineering has right now in terms of five-axis milling and, you know, those are the kind of processes we'll have in-house with this new capabilities and this new certification.
So what would be the, capital deployment roadmap here? Because if let's say we decide to, get full-on into aerospace, I think the machines, the size of the machines are a bit on the expensive side. So will that not weigh down on the whole unit economics of the business as you're trying to scale it up?
So like I've always maintained, we will take calculated risk when we see the opportunity. And right now it's too early for me to comment on this because we don't have those. We don't have the business in hand. If the RFQ is lucrative enough where we can put in money and it's a good, in the end we get good aerospace, high value, high margin business out of it, we'll take that risk. Otherwise, of course, we start small, just like everywhere else. We're not a company that goes all in and, you know, deploys all resources and then suffers or maybe tries to, you know, get something out in 1 year and gets heavily depreciated. We've never done that traditionally. So we always start small. We learn and we build in a certain manner, which is safe for us and our investors.
Right. And finally, one small question. We've been hearing on ground feedback that Tata AutoComps is getting a lot very aggressive in India in terms of how they want to expand. So are we also experiencing or are we also benefiting from that aggressiveness?
Absolutely. So Tata AutoComps was our 10th largest customer one year back, and this month it was our second largest. So we are growing very fast with them. And they are a great company and they are focused on technology, focused on bringing the niche businesses to India that you see. We already have probably that the Tesla business we have right now, the automotive Tesla business is done through Tata Auto Component. And they are hand in glove with Tesla right now. So anything large coming from Tesla to India comes through Tata Auto Comp. And there we are an approved machining supplier, one of the only ones for certain commodities. So that is a big advantage for us as well.
Right. So in future, we could see possible expansion in dedicated capacity for this particular customer.
Yeah, it's certain. It will happen. It's not probable. It will happen because we are already negotiating a couple of very large projects with them.
Right, Sachin sir. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. And again, I would just like to say congrats on the great set of numbers and a fabulous execution. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ranjan.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Samarth Gupta from Divisa Family Office. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Is my voice audible? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
This is just one elementary question. When will we be able to see that the free cash flow is positive? Second question is, in the export line, is there any cost-sharing basis of the expense side? Do you have any contracts related to that? Just wanted to understand.
I'll let Mr. Verma answer the first question.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. This is Sanjeev Verma. So, we have been investing a lot of capex in our businesses, and there has been a lot of expansions. Some have been in our plans and visions, and some, of course, comes up with opportunities. So, and as we generate cash, we're continuously deploying that. We have raised funds from, equity. We're also sort of raising funds from debt. So there'll be a lot of expansions and, capital investments which will go on. So, till the time, of course, we see there is good amount of, capacity available for at least 3-5 years. So, and since we are at the scale-up phase as of now, We are growing, you know, fast. We are growing at 50% plus growth rate. So we do see continuous requirement of capital investment, and hence, you know, it's tough to say when our free cash flow will be positive, but the cash flow whichever will be generated is of course going back into the business, and that's what is sort of helping us to grow fast.
Got it.
And could you come back with your second part of the question so I could answer that?
So just wanted to understand this elementary thing. On the export side, when we are exporting, are there any contracts where the cost of export is being shared by the supplier?
I don't understand that. What do you mean by the cost of exports? I'm sorry. Could you be more clear on that?
So what I have heard like if you the general service of the cost of like the freight management and these things, are these shared or it's all paid by us only?
No, so that is whatever contracts have been negotiated and have been formed between a buyer and a mm-hmm. customer, between a buyer and a supplier, are honored. And mm-hmm. with ZF, we are working on Ex-Works terms. Essentially, we just pack the parts and they lift it. Everything else is their responsibility. So we just pack and we tell them the parts are ready. They do whatever they have to. They consolidate and put containerize and then ship those parts. With some other customers, we have terms like CIF, essentially where we have to supply the parts to the port. Port in, let's say, in the U.S. and up to New York, we pay the freight. So it just depends upon the terms. In general, the buyer provides us with development costs at the time of development of parts, the tooling and fixture costs. So whatever other overhead, other than, you know, of course, the piece price, we also charge from our customers the tooling, development and fixtures, whatever goes to make that part for the first time. So that is provided by the buyers.
Okay. Got it. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. The next is a follow-up from the line of Pranjal Mukhija from Growth Sphere. Please go ahead.
Hi. So thank you for this opportunity once again. Saksham, I had two more questions. So wanted some sort of understanding as to we'd been hiring a lot of advisors for like different geographies, and I think for USA we have Tom Huggins. But if you could also highlight, you know, like what is the progress on hiring other advisors for different geographies, and like, you know, what kind of business opportunities are we seeing in those particular geographies through them?
So yeah, Tom Huggins was hired about more than a year back, and our business in US has expanded significantly. After that, we have been presented with opportunities like there's new marine companies that we are working with or quoting for right now. Next month, Arush and Ayarush is our head of US business. He's also my brother. So we are both in the US for almost the entire month. And so we are working very closely with Tom Huggins, meeting new companies in the US. And so
but any dedicated person for like Israel or like some, you know, other geographies that we are looking to look for business?
So we if you are reading our updates, we have a new independent director, Saurabh Singh. Saurabh is ex armed forces. He has served in the MOD or armed forces for almost 10 years before he came and saw the potential in us and wanted to be associated with the company. And he's he knows exactly where our products can go. And he's been helpful in bridging the gap between what we do and what the defense needs from us. So last 6 months with his presence, we've been able to meet a lot of new companies. I can give you names of some. BDL, we've done our supplier registration. Bharat Dynamics Limited, the supplier registration has been done there successfully. Other DPSUs are YIL, MIL, where we've started quoting for those parts. And these are also good ammunition. And if you know, BDL makes missiles, exclusively makes missiles. So they use a lot of machine parts to make those missiles. So So yeah, Saurabh's presence has been helpful, and he's helping us create more defense opportunities.
Right. And sir, in the BL business, I mean the artillery shells that we're supplying right now, any plans of like, you know, getting into the precision fuse technology going forward, maybe with a tie-up with someone or, you know, some sort of collaboration with someone on this? Because I mean it's a huge market in India, right? And then we're seeing like a huge demand for this 155 mm shell product.
So yeah, Pranjal, all the options are on the table. We have explored that. We have explored TOTs, we've explored joint ventures where we could make a fully finished product. But of course, it's something that's still very much at just a discussion. So whenever there's something concrete happening, we will be telling you all about it.
Right, sir. Thank you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vinay Rai from Kamaya. Please go ahead.
Hi, Akshan. Can you please tell the amount of CapEx spent on the stamping project and what was the cost of acquisition of the 10-acre land?
So the 10-acre land, starting with that, costed us around 17-18 crores. It's essentially more than 10 acres. It's about 11 acres. So that's the total money we paid. And the CapEx on the stamping is ongoing. It's not completed yet. I would say about 70% of it has been done. And as we continue to buy the rest of the assets in a phased manner. And so the total CapEx incurred, including the tools, fixtures, everything that's needed to run the plant, run the business, would be approximately 9 crores.
Okay. And in the investor presentation, I saw that 2.5% revenue was for renewables. So what are we exactly doing here? Are we trying to scale up the business? What is the strategy for the same?
Yeah, we make some cast products which are assembled in solar trackers. And so that's been a big project for us last year. And other than that, we have started making solar fasteners as well from our cold forging facility in Faridabad. So those are the two products that we've done last year. And they continue to be part of our business even today. Solar fasteners could grow in volume. These are stainless steel fasteners, and that's because now we have capabilities of cold forging in-house.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I now hand the floor over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you. Thank you to all the investors and all the potential investors who joined us. And yeah, we look forward to being your partners and to give you another successful year and hope we surprise you with our numbers in the next earnings call as well.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Nuvama Wealth and Investment Limited, that concludes this conference call. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.